The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. A recent report finds that San Antonio's Black and Hispanic communities are disproportionately affected by poverty, especially in four specific zip codes. Studies show that there is a direct line between the policies created a century ago to limit home ownership, things like redlining and deed restrictions, and the economic inequality that we have right with us today. How can we help families break out of a poverty trap by helping them build assets? Without assets, people just make ends meet. They live paycheck to paycheck. But with assets, people can remain stable through financial emergencies, stay in their homes and neighborhoods, use their good credit to secure a mortgage, pursue higher education for themselves and their children, take risk as a result, and they can start better, go to better jobs, start a business, and they can save for retirement. Lots of arguments in favor of trying to acquire assets. One thing is, though, it's hard, especially if you're starting with basically nothing, and it also requires a positive mindset. So how do we help the community develop that, and how do we steer them towards programs that want to help them build up those assets? Their number to call in is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Has this happened to you? Are you seeing this in your own family? Did your parents struggled and they were able to build up some assets, and did that help you achieve the prosperity that you enjoy today? Have you seen it around you in your neighborhoods? How can we build upon that? 210-614-8980. You could also email us at The Source and tweet at us at TPR Source. And with us today, we're joined by Frances Gonzalez. She is a program officer for the San Antonio Area Asset Funders Network. Frances, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Mary Gar is in the studio with us as well, Chief Executive Officer for the Family Service Association. Mary Gar, great to have you back.
Thank you very much.
And on the line, we've got Christine Drennan. She's Associate Professor of Sociology and Anthropology at Trinity University. Christine, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, David.
So, Christine, can you give us a little background, and then we'll get into more of like what does this look like today and some of the programs are available. We were saying that there is this legacy that has prevented particularly communities of color from having been able to gain these assets, generations ago or even not that long ago. What were these policies?
Yeah, I can talk about policies, but I also want to talk about some cause and effect relationships. So as far as just kind of the policies that got us into this situation, we're not that different than any other city in the United States, in that as our neighborhoods developed, a lot of them were developed under highly restrictive and exploitative types of policies that were incredibly racist. So some people could live in some places and some in another. Some people had capital available to them to buy a house, to fix a house, and others didn't. And it was completely along racial lines, which also folded into neighborhoods. So for us, it was a lot of especially West Side and East Side neighborhoods that were not deed restricted, whereas all the other neighborhoods were. So that's where our non-white populations ended up moving to. The really interesting thing, though, that we've got going for us, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about it, is that when we were building these places up, unlike in a lot of cities that were building tenements for the poor and for non-whites, we were actually building single-family houses. They were quite small, and some were substandard, but we are a city of single-family houses that's relied on homeownership, and those houses are still there, and we've allowed them to deteriorate because of these old policies, but it also is a potential opportunity for us in terms of homeownership and asset building.
But isn't it important that we recognize that there were institutional policies, barriers, discrimination that were put forth by the banking industry, not just by our own local Jim Crow type mentality, but also by the government and the government lending, even in the GI Bill that targeted people of color to keep them from gaining a foothold.
Yep. In all those neighborhoods, and that's so our neighborhoods were divided up according to the risk that they pose in terms of lending. And the way that they measured risk was by a couple of things. One of them was by the quality of the housing. And the second one was by the demographics of the population in the neighborhood. So if you had a really high quality housing and an Anglo homogeneous population, it was considered a very low risk environment and a green light to the banks. On the opposite, and this was federal policy, it's written in federal appraisal manuals that were in place all the way through the 20th century up until the Fair Housing Act in 1968, when President Johnson eliminated that. But the red line neighborhoods were areas that had not been built as well, often with small and substandard housing, but that had been available for a non-white population, so that the demographics had historically been non-white. Those were considered a high risk.
They also had things like poor drainage and other issues of infrastructure.
Yeah, no street lighting. They never had the underground drainage systems, street lighting, sidewalks. And we still struggle with this today. These are still the areas that flood because when they were built originally, they didn't get the permanent infrastructure that they needed.
And so what does that matter about today? Someone says, that's an interesting history lesson, Christine Drennan, professor at Trinity University, but I care about today.
She's smart, right? And she's brilliant, right? It's still a policy question, is because the way that the rules are written in the United States, you and I, as middle class and as working class, most of our assets are in our home, right? I don't own stocks and bonds and all of that kind of stuff. I own a house, and my house appreciates. And I don't mean in terms of just real estate speculation. Housing appreciates in value because we continually try to keep it up, and we invest in it. That's our small bank account. So at some point in my life, I can borrow against my house to send my kid to college, and I can ultimately will it to them, and then they have a head start in the next generation. So if you started in the housing market behind, you were never able to accumulate assets through the generations. Right? If you started ahead because of your skin color, then through these generations, and I'm talking if a generation is 17 years, this is five or six generations of accumulated wealth now since the 19-teens, 1920s, right? Even more than that. And we do accumulate that wealth through the generations and pass it on, right? Inheritance taxes have gotten increasingly low. So these are all policies and political practices that enabled someone who owned a house or had access to a house to accumulate more wealth. So now in 2019, if you weren't part of that story until 1968, that's now only a couple of generations. And you are significantly behind in the accumulation of wealth. And that's how we get ahead.
So you were not, as a family or ancestors, they were not allowed to pass go and collect $200. They were stuck back on a Baltic Avenue and never really able to get out of that part and move down the monopoly board. And so here we are. Years later, we have families who are dealing with multi-generational poverty, and they're wondering, why is that? And not just the fact that they didn't have that ability to gain that asset, and that's significant, but also they may have never really felt that they were part of the community and didn't develop the ideology and the mental framework to do better. So we're going to talk about that. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. There are programs now available to help people move out of poverty. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a recent report about poverty in San Antonio and asset building. How can helping communities here in San Antonio build these assets become a foundation of financial stability, and how that can help them break out of the poverty trap? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We'd like to hear stories from families here in San Antonio that maybe this was an experience that their family went through. Maybe you guys were able to have some property, build that up, and be able to leverage that for your education and move forward and experience abundance. What do you think about making that experience more widely available so that other people can enjoy that too, and how that would benefit the entirety of the San Antonio community? The number is 210-614-8980. Let's go to a call with David. And David, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking my call. Great topic. My point is, I think it's a sociological one. With recent people having this need for instant gratification, I think that tends to counter what you need to have the mentality for building assets. I myself was a child there of the West Side, and as my father and them, he moved through the base structures that were there. He took those positions and ended up retiring. I followed that kind of footsteps, and I think the military somewhat helped me, and I'm now out, helped me to learn that need of putting away that instant gratification and have that mindset. So not only is it policy, I'm asking the professor there, what do we need to do to talk to our children and educate people on the idea that you don't need that, you know, say, $1,000 cell phone if it's not within your means, you know, living within your means.
All right, David, thank you for that. So I'm going to go first to Frances Gonzalez, and she's a program officer for the San Antonio Area Asset Funders Network. And if you could sort of address what David's talking about.
Sure. So Christine did a great job of setting up the point that I'm about to make, which is that we're trying to reset this idea that the zip code you are born in defines your destiny, right? So this idea around asset building is really about giving people tools so that they can figure out what to do with their income. So if you think about it this way, income is what we need every day to pay our bills and to make ends meet. Asset building is what it sort of puts us in a future orientation. It's the kinds of things that help us think about the future. So David was talking about his dad's home. He was talking about instant gratification. But remember, you know, folks who are thinking about the future are more likely to then hold off on that gratification, right? So what we're talking about is, how do we help folks with those tools? It's financial coaching, financial counseling, and that's really the foundation for some of this. Sometimes you get that at home, you know, it's a learned behavior. Sometimes it's an influenced behavior. Maybe your friends talk about putting money away, maybe they don't. So it's how do we incorporate more of that understanding and learning with families in San Antonio?
And Mary Garr, Chief Executive Officer for Family Service Association, I understand you're part of the data gathering for this report. So what did you see, and how does that reflect on David's observation?
So, you know, with the clients that we serve, many of them come into us from different means. But when they come in, oftentimes they have an acute need where we need to help meet whatever's going on with them today. And that's on the counseling side. So it could be helping them with utility assistance to pay that bill, or with some food assistance, or to help keep them from being evicted. But once we can get them past that point, then we can move into the financial coaching phase, where we start working to help them understand that they can establish goals and look ahead. So in our process, you know, first off, it's we assess where they at today, and it could be helping them identify what their debt is, if they can understand that. Then once they identify that, what can they do to establish a debt reduction plan? And then from there, you know, do they even have a safe bank account? Many of them don't, and they rely on the predatory lenders or other means to be able to cash a check for work. And then once they have that, then start moving then into how can they improve their credit scores? And then helping them establish those goals. And for many of them, it's maybe the idea of purchasing their first home. And we've had a number of success stories in the several years that we've been working in this space.
Now, Christine Drennan, David's comments, he told the story about his dad and his worked really hard and was able to move out of one part of town and go to another and build up assets. Is that a usual kind of story? Is that common?
That's the American dream story, is that, you know, we grow up in a neighborhood, we are financially more stable and probably better off than our parents were. And we move out into a new neighborhood that might have bigger homes or newer houses or better schools. And that's how we've been acculturated. That's the dream that most of us were raised in the 20th century.
That's the raisin in the sun.
Yeah, it is. It is. But across the United States, the dream is shrinking. And again, for a lot of big macroeconomic reasons, but also policy changes, that, you know, real estate has become now a speculative tool rather than just a home. So we have a lot of competition on who's trying to buy houses and things like that. We're not building the right houses in a lot of ways, but also jobs are different. So David's dad grew up in the military. He did as well, which is a really stable kind of job and job trajectory. But especially in industry, those jobs are harder and harder to find. So a lot of the conditions are different, and the American dream is not available to people like it used to be. So we need to rethink a lot of the ways. Well, and then I back up for a second, like the kid with the $1,000 cell phone. You know, kids still have dreams, and how can we get the dreams to articulate with where the reality is? And then you're talking about the media as well. So as far as like American dream. Getting back to San Antonio and talking about San Antonio, we, unlike a lot of other cities, have entire neighborhoods that are so affordable, where if people can get in and make their first investment there, then they can start to build that capital, that personal asset base, and maybe they can fulfill their American dream in that neighborhood, in that inner city neighborhood, or use that as a stepping stone, like David did, maybe out of the inner city and into kind of our suburban neighborhoods as well. We do have that capacity in San Antonio, not like a lot of other cities that have lost it or have bulldozed it.
Let's go back to the phones, 210-614-8980. Let's go to Chris. Hi, Chris. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. Hey, what y'all were just talking about as I got cut back over sounded really interesting. I was curious about building communities with organizations such as Habitat for Humanity. I know when I've worked with them in the past, the homeowners or future homeowners are there working on it. I don't know if y'all are familiar with how the process works. As soon as the home is done, do those people actually own the home and thereby contribute to their wealth and their assets? And if so, is there something that we could do to build communities like that or invest more into to have increased wealth for first-time home buyers or maybe people with lower means?
Sure.
As an entry into the system?
All right, Chris, thank you for that call. Let me go to Mary Garr, Chief Executive Officer of the Family Services. Habitat for Humanity, can you kind of explain how that works, and is that a solution?
So, Chris, I can tell you that one of our recent clients is one of our success stories. She was a single mom. She was working part-time at a local store here. Transportation was a challenge, but she was able to make it work. And she was part of our financial empowerment counseling and then coaching. And she is a recent recipient of a Habitat for Humanity home. So we worked her through that whole process of being able to participate in the program. There is a sweat equity by participants in the program and investment, and she's now on her path to home ownership. They don't receive it outright. They do have like an affordable mortgage that they have to go through. I don't have all the details on that, but she is a success story there. We've had others also that have gone through Habitat for Humanity, as well as other home purchase programs to become successful.
So Francis Gonzalez with the San Antonio Area Asset Funders Network, this report that y'all came out with identified 4 high-need San Antonio zip codes. So what were those zip codes?
So those zip codes were 78207, near West Side, 78202 and 78208 that are sort of East Side, and then 78211, which is South Side. So those are your basic inner city neighborhoods. And the report basically said that these neighborhoods, as a general rule, if you look at the data, have so many issues going on there. Everything from high poverty rates, issues around education and low attainment, to unemployment rates being higher than maybe the city's average. So there's a lot of layered issues there.
And also life expectancy in these neighborhoods is shorter.
Right. So they're also dealing with a lot of acute health issues. Families have higher incidences of diabetes, juvenile diabetes, heart disease. So there's a lot of issues happening there in those areas.
And there is a lack of access to health care because this is an area where we have a high rate of uninsured.
Right, exactly. There's a high rate of uninsured. So if you can imagine what the snowball effect of all of that is. So if families are stressed out about their finances, very likely that they will also have a harder time with their health outcomes. They're going to be more difficult to get over some of those issues.
Mary Garr with the Family Service Association, you go into these neighborhoods, you help these families. What are they telling you? What's life like in 78211?
So, you know, for many of our families, our over half of the families that we serve are in less than $10,000 a year. The average income for our families going through our financial coaching is about $22,000 a year. Two-thirds of them would not be able to pay an emergency expense of $500, whether it's for a health issue or a car breaking down or any, you know, air conditioner, whatever. So, you know, these are people that are right on the cusp of being in crisis. And it's being able to help them identify those opportunities to get them through that and then put them on the sustainability plan. And as Francis said, you know, it's not just an issue of economic insecurity. It's all of those wraparound services, what we call the social determinants of health. So it could be health issues that are going on or access to health. It could be, you know, being in a safe neighborhood or not and having a social support network out there. Did they have access to early high quality education? Did they graduate from high school? Did they get some job skills training or college? Are they underemployed or unemployed? And all of that factors into where are they going to be at financially. And as you noted, David, you know, we're dealing with these intergenerational poverty issues, it's how to break them out of this cycle. And if you go into certain neighborhoods, certain ones of these zip codes, yes, they might own their home, but it's falling down around them and they can't afford to maintain it. They do have the social fabric out there, but are they in a safe neighborhood? Are there sidewalks? Many of them still don't. Do they have air conditioning? Are there feral dogs in the neighborhood? Is there a crack house up the street? And those are some of the spaces that, you know, we work in and try to help them work through these situations to become in, you know, in a safer, stronger, more stable path for life for themselves and for their families.
And Christine Drennan, what's the common factor with 78207, 78202, 78211, 78208? What do you see when you see these numbers?
A lot of those areas are the areas that when they were originally developed, they were developed with that small, more humble housing, and then they were redlined so that people couldn't invest. So like what Mary was just saying, as far as your house may be small, it doesn't mean it's a bad house, but it's crumbling. It's deteriorated with deferred maintenance because you've never had the capital that you needed in order to keep it up. And then that folds into everything else. There are some interesting zip codes around there, though, that where we see tremendous gentrification. So that's a celebration for somebody, but it's also could be an eviction or kind of a push out for somebody else. So especially in 78202, a lot of that area was, when it was originally built up, was built up for a very high a high income level. So if you think about the mansions that are very close in,
that's like in Dignity Hill.
Exactly. They're beautiful, right? And they were extremely restricted when they were first built for a high-income Anglo population.
Right.
They were later redlined, which is interesting, right? They were later redlined because of the non-white population very close by.
I got to take a break here. We'll continue our conversation talking about a report on poverty in San Antonio, some of the area zip codes that are troubling, what's going on in there, And what does this mean for San Antonio? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Asset building, how to keep that within reach, within hope. 210-614-8980. We'll be right back.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a report on poverty in San Antonio, specifically related to asset building. How can help families develop some assets, allow them to break out of the poverty trap? We're looking at four specific zip codes where there are some high needs here in San Antonio: 78207, 78202, 78211, and 78208. If you live in these zip codes, or maybe you lived in these zip codes, what did you see there? What do you think needs to happen in these particular areas and around those areas to help lift these areas up? The number is 210-614-8980, and Noah is on the line. Noah, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just wanted to chime in a little bit about my own personal story. I grew up in the south side of town. Now, my family had immigrated from Mexico, right after the revolution, settled into the west side of San Antonio. My dad eventually, with having two or three jobs, was able to purchase a home in the south side of town. And that's where I grew up, and that's where they're still at over 50 years in the same area. But I guess for me, it's a little different. Is what I found is that my parents instilled that hard work ethic, and at the same time, we grew up in church. So because of that, there was also the fear of going out and doing things you're not supposed to do, like selling drugs and joining gangs and that sort of thing. And which is also a trap, because once you find yourself in that lifestyle, trying to take a shortcut, trying to make a quick buck, if you're in and out of prison, you just never have that stable life. And, I was able to, steer away from a lot of the mistakes that I saw my friends doing. And as a first-generation American myself, we teach kids, go to college. And although I didn't go into college, my ledger was at zero. I wasn't negative when it was time for me to move out, and I don't have that college debt that a lot of kids, sure, get into. And at the same time, that hurts their credit, and it's just a spiral effect.
It does.
You
know? So Noah, thank you for that call. So I'm going to go to Mary Gar with the Family Services Association and talk about how when you do live in these areas and you have these stresses on you, and then you have these other things happening around you, whether it be drugs or the gangs, or that just makes it all the harder to break out of the poverty level. I mean, is that part of the fact that you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, so you take the quick out? I mean, what does that look like?
Absolutely. So, what Noah talked about was he had a very strong social cohesive fabric in his life, strong factors through family and church that helped ensure that he was on a strong path to be able to become a productive, healthy adult on his own. Many people, if they don't have that in their lives, if they come from a dysfunctional family that is already dealing not just with the stresses of poverty, but with dysfunctionality, maybe substance abuse in the home, family violence in the home, health issues, and then if they start getting pushed into other relationships through peers, through what might be out in the neighborhood, when you get on that path, you can get back on a good path, but it's very hard to without that strong social support structure. And it's what we've talked about before about addressing those social determinants of health. You can't just address one piece without looking at all the other challenges that are in somebody's life, because we have to have comprehensive approaches of how about how to truly move them forward, not just for today, but for their future. And it's not just the individual, but it's working with the whole family. And then working with the whole family helps then, you know, potentially with the block and the neighborhood, the community, et cetera. So it's, you know, we have to work together on all these different pieces to help break them from that cycle. That's all they've ever been exposed to. If you're a teen parent and you didn't have a strong parent in your own family, how do you know how to be a good parent? If you had family abuse going on, domestic violence in your family, you know, you might repeat those same cycles. And all the studies prove this out day in, day out. So it's how to be able to break those cycles. And they've got to learn how to do that. They've got to have good influences in those strong, stable, nurturing relationships to be able to show them the alternatives to become successful.
Right. And also, we're not trying to disparage these particular zip codes. I mean, these are parts of town that I think they rock. You know, I love these, you know,
And David, on that, there's some real strong social cohesion in many of those neighborhoods, which are a real strength. It's just coming together in a positive way to move forward.
And so Francis Gonzalez with the San Antonio Area Asset Funders Network, you know, there's a lot going on in these neighborhoods, positive and negative. And how do you all perceive that? How do you all move that forward?
Sure. So a couple of thoughts, David. One of the things that I think is really critical here is that the piece that's going to help is this financial counseling, financial coaching. Mary gave the example of initially they work with families on what is the issue that's bringing them in the door. They could be they're behind on their utility payments. They may have a family member in the home who needs electricity to stay on, but they're behind on their electricity payment. So they come to Mary's Family Service Association and they need help. And so one of the things that we learned from this report is that we need more of the types of people that Mary has within her organization that help families. So right now in San Antonio, we have about 12 financial coaches. The funders that are working with the Area Asset Funders Network said, you know what, we need more than that. If we're going to really make a dent in poverty and sort of stop the cycles, we need more people helping families. And that's part of what we released the day of the report.
Sure. So if we want to have a large scale solution, you know, Habitat for Humanity does great work, but that's not going to be the solution. They're able to help a few people. And the same with all the programs that y'all are doing. I mean, we have a structural problem in America that is taking opportunity away from people. The poor pay more. You know, if you're going to buy, you know, a box of cereal at the store, you know, the poor people can afford, it's going to cost you more per ounce. And that's the way it is with everything in life. You know, you can only buy afford a car that's going to be breaking down. You can be putting more money into that thing. It's just really, really hard. So, I mean, how do we address people and help them get over this magnificent hurdle that's in front of them when you are poor, Mary Gar?
Great question. And lots of complex answers to that. And, you know, there's some good answers, some not so good answers. It's how to pull it together.
We need to address it on the ground in the neighborhoods and these homes. But
correct.
Also, we need to be looking at it as we develop large-scale economic policy, particularly right now in this election cycle.
So one of the things that we talk about is upstream versus downstream roles in people's lives. And we need to see more changes in policies that help to improve the conditions that people are born, raised, live, work, and play in, that we also need to then help create those opportunities through those conditions based on those policies. We really need to have more research into some of these areas to see what's effective, what's not effective, so we can concentrate our dollars and our time into those areas that are showing more effect down the road, and then therefore put the funding support into those areas as well. So as Francis was saying, with, you know, when we can have people get into financial counseling and then evolve them into coaching, we're still dealing with one person, one family at a time. How do we do that on that holistic scale? And we've got got to address. Is it lack of access to quality education? Are they now unemployed or underemployed? Do they have health issues that have all wrapped around this? You know, are they in, how do we help improve the neighborhoods in which they're in today, or help them move into other neighborhoods that will put them on a better trajectory? There's not one answer, and it's all the communities working together, and it's from a local level, but as you said, you know, city, county, state, federal level, there are still inherent policies out there that make it very hard for people to move forward. We've got to address this at all levels.
And Christine Drennan at Trinity University, what do you see as on the macro level with the scaffolding that we have in the United States with policies for housing and taxation? Is that a burden on low income?
It's getting worse. Federal level is getting worse. And it's pushing housing out from just being a home and a shelter in which to raise your kids to a speculative tool for financial gain. So that we see housing, especially our smaller houses on the west side, just getting bought up. And there's no identifiable owner anymore. It's an LLC. And that means somebody is just buying up housing and sitting on it for speculative reasons. So the federal level is making this worse. We have to think about it. What can we do at the local level? And there are things that we can do. When Mary was talking about social cohesion factors, and we were kind of talking about that at the level of the family, and some families do struggle, right? They got off on a wrong start. But our schools used to play that role also. Sports and music and art kept kids off the street and making good decisions for a very long time. And then we defunded all of that, right? And now we have a lot of schools that can't even offer some of that. In terms of housing, you know, what can we do in terms of housing to incentivize homeownership down into lower income levels so that people begin to, again, to invest in what they own rather than what somebody else owns? There's some really interesting statistics that came out recently from the local LISC office. And what they showed was that they've been most successful with people making 60% of the area median income, which is in the 30s, as far as first-time home ownership, because some of these families tend to carry a little less debt, and now they're moving them into home ownership so that they can now accumulate some wealth. So this is stuff we can do and we can work on at a very local level where it definitely depends on the next election cycle because the federal level is making it worse.
And what happens if there is a recession? We know that people who are on the financial margins are the ones who are the most vulnerable. And we saw in the Great Recession, many people lost their homes due to these financial instruments that we still don't know what they were, but we know who paid the price. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking more about poverty in San Antonio, talk about some of the zip codes we need to be paying attention to, and how can we get some assistance, coaching, cheer people on so they can find a way to break out of the poverty trap. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We've got concerns about low-wage jobs here in San Antonio, wage stagnation, paid sick leave. These are all issues that combine to create this poverty. We have poverty in San Antonio, folks. I hate to break it to you, but it's there. But we can do something about it by coming together and build assets. But how do we do that? And it's not easy. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Let's go to Margaret on the phones. Margaret, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm curious if your guests, with historical redlining, what sort of a relation do we have then to taxation of homes and then schooling and education, and that would then be segregation because the demographics obviously were being pushed into different areas.
All right. So let me go to Christine Drennan. And Christine, you only got about 2.5 minutes to explain this. And I know you could talk for hours.
It usually takes me an hour.
but the answer is yes, right?
Yeah, there's lots and lots of evidence just going through old school board meeting notes that at the time when our school districts consolidated from 68 down to 18, a lot of that consolidation was along those redlining lines. So especially in SAISD, the suburban districts formed around areas that had been greenlined and deed restricted that were heavily Anglo. And they kept out, Edgewood is the classic story of this, they kept out the Hispanic communities in the consolidation process, which really took place in the 1950s.
All right. And school districts being dependent upon local property taxes, it kept those school districts poor and unable to provide competitive resources against other school districts.
Yeah, even with our Robin Hood. Thank goodness for our Robin Hood, but even with that, which is highly flawed, it still does not equalize between students.
All right. It's another show we're going to have to do, Christine. I'll have you back on that one, I promise. But right now, I'm going to go back to Francis Gonzalez with the San Antonio Area Asset Funders Network. When y'all talked to families, what were they telling you about their concerns?
Thank you. So one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we captured in our report is the voice of community. So we held focus groups, and we learned from residents what their financial concerns were. You know, at the end of the day, people said, we're having trouble paying our bills. People want to pay their bills. We're having trouble saving money. They know that that's important. To the tune of 74% of the people we were talking about, concerned with their bills. 68% said, we're having trouble saving money. And then 37% said, hey, I have bad credit or no credit. So what does that mean in terms of their goals? We wanted to know, what do you want to do with your life? What's important to you? So 63% said, I know I need to repair my credit. 63% said, I want to prepare for a future purchase. So they know what it's going to take. The 53% said, I need to build up my savings because I know that if I have savings, I don't crash into this sort of predatory lending cycle. And they know that that impacts them for a long, long time.
That's where you have to pay almost like 7% of your paycheck right off the top just to turn it into cash.
Sometimes those interest rates are like 1,000%. So folks have a really hard time getting out of those situations. My point in bringing that up, David, and thank you for the question, is that families know what the issues are. They are dealing with them every day, but they have goals. They're aspirational. You know, they know what they want to do for their families and their children.
Okay, another caller. Let's go to Mario. Mario, hi. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Sure. Thank you. I just wanted to say that around 2 years ago, I served as a note taker for some focus group meetings in the 78207 zip code, meeting with people who provide services to low-income people in that area. And what was really enlightening to me is that the county's community health needs assessment report had just come out, and every issue that was brought up in those focus group meetings was a social determinant of health. It was that they need better access to transportation. They need better access to a good education. They need access to jobs that pay a living wage. And so the people who are working in there, they know what those needs are. They know what can move the needle. They're doing that work, and they just need more support, more financial support, so they can provide more of those services.
All right, Mario, thank you for the call. Mary Garr, do you think that a lot of families, they know these things, but you get trapped into the day-to-day?
I agree with that. We see that with a lot of our families. They want to improve their lives and the lives of their children, but it's how can they do so? And as I said earlier, when they come in, whatever door they come into us, because we offer programs to address each of those social determinants of health, you know, we do that comprehensive assessment, and we realize that they need help in more than one generally. And it's how to be able to pull those together in a comprehensive program for them to help meet those needs. And it takes time. You know, these are challenges that they've been dealing with their whole lives, perhaps, and maybe their parents and grandparents did. And so it's getting them, you know, on a whole new different way of thinking and being able to see those opportunities out there and working comprehensively within the community, because it's all of us working together. It could be the schools, you know, it could be the health system, you know, working with VIA for transportation or whoever it is, the policymakers, to help them identify what can we do as a community to start really turning this around.
And this is a community that is really susceptible to diabetes. You know, when you're under a lot of stress, it's really hard not to stress eat. That's going to throw off your diabetes regimen.
And more than that, so, you know, the studies are showing, and I'll throw in the effect of trauma on people's lives, adverse childhood experiences I know you've spoken about in the past, but when people are dealing with a lot of toxic stress, it takes a toll on the body. And the studies are showing that toxic stress over time can add to effects that create those conditions with diabetes and obesity and the high blood pressure and, you know, other factors that could cause them into depression, anxiety, et cetera, that lead to lower health status, which then feeds right into underemployment and being unable to meet
right.
the bills,
and then
et cetera,
you make bad decisions as well. So, Francis?
I was going to just say a couple of things about Bexar County and San Antonio in general, David, because I think it's important to note that a lot of folks in San Antonio are having issues. San Antonio is one of the most integrated cities in the country, and yet we're, from an economic point of view, we're very segregated. And just to give you an example, the average credit score here in San Antonio is about 646. You need a 700 credit score to get in the door to some mortgage companies. 725 points will get you a less expensive mortgage. So our folks have a long way to go, and this is not just non-white. This is the community as a whole. In Bexar County, 14% of folks in Bexar County have student debt. 55% of Hispanics don't have 3 months of savings. 44% of San Antonians overall don't have 3 months of savings. So you know that any little change in a household could potentially hurt that family. So this issue around economics, poverty, it's a citywide concern.
And Caroline, I want to go to Caroline on the phones. Go ahead, Caroline.
Yeah, I was listening and just had a comment. It made me think about along the lines of the education, the financial counseling, the financial coaching that Habitat for Humanity provides, and a lot of this sounds like it's a reactive. Wouldn't it be nice if we taught these principles in schools as young as middle school, junior high, and it be a program where the parents are involved as well, so they're learning along with their children? Because a lot of this is vocabulary. It's what you're taught to even be aware of at a very young age, and then they start thinking that way. I don't have a solution, but I think that it would be nice if San Antonio could come up with something like that, then maybe we could be an example for the country.
All right, Caroline, thank you for the call. Mary Garr with the Family Service Association.
I do know that some school districts already offer those kinds of programs. But as you noted, you know, offering it for the children, but sometimes children then will be teaching the parents. So, you know, there are programs where parents are offered the opportunity to learn along as well. And that goes back to that family strengthening, parent engagement to help them better understand. But economic literacy is just as important as health literacy in helping people to be able to understand where they're at and what can they do to start taking steps to move forward. And again, not being able to do it on their own, what are the resources, where can they go to receive that help?
And Francis Gonzalez.
Real quickly, I know that Family Service Association, but many of our other partners are actually working with young teens. So if they're getting internships through some very good programs here in San Antonio, they're actually having financial coaching as part of their internship program. So the good news is that there are, in effect, folks working on how do we impact the understanding and the learning around economics with young people.
Christine Drennan, real quickly, this maybe you can give us some historic perspective on how San Antonio, the legacy that we have of coming together as neighborhoods to fight for better resources and opportunities.
We have been traditionally a leader in that in the country through COPS Metro Alliance, and who came together and brought street lighting and running water to a lot of our South Side and West Side neighborhoods. The iteration of that today is some of the neighborhoods are again beginning to organize and to work together rather than against one another for resources. So you've got the Tier 1 Neighborhood Coalition, which is the neighborhood coalition of neighborhoods within Loop 410. And when one of them is starting to feel stress or a problem, often from development where they haven't had a lot of say. The other neighborhoods will rally. So there's a lot of different things that are happening right now at an extremely local level.
And the Texas Organizing Project, would that be included in that as well?
Yeah. And I'm thinking more neighborhood issues. They work more on social issues, right? They're not place-based.
All right, and
but
so
they're absolutely doing it.
And also, finally, let me go back to Frances Gonzalez. 20 seconds. Are you optimistic?
Absolutely. The funding community, which is the area asset funders, it's philanthropy, it's foundations and grant makers. They're focused on asset building. So I'm very, very hopeful.
So you think we can get folks to take control of their financial future, build this foundation? It starts small, but it starts to grow, and that things can get better.
Absolutely.
All right. Frances Gonzalez with the San Antonio Area Asset Founders Network. Christine Drennan on the line from Trinity University. Mary Garr, Family Service Association. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.